Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want to contact us, send an email to psychologypathwayspodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. You know, I just met with a student from another university, Valerie, who's studying abroad in Australia in the summer of 2020.
Ooh.
Yeah, she found me on the internet and wanted to talk about how to apply to programs in clinical health psychology, and so we got together. So if you're out there, Valerie, this was coming out to you because it made me think. It made me think about whether or not it's a good idea for her to study abroad if she's thinking about applying to graduate school by the fall of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ended up saying is, you know, if that's what you want to do, then do it, because life kind of trumps the resume sometimes.
Absolutely.
But it made me think, you know, what do you think, Aurora? Should a psychology student study abroad?
That's a really great question. And it's very specific to each person and what's going on in their world. What may make sense to someone may not make sense to someone else. So there's a lot of variables at play. So I definitely think that every student should at least ask and see what programs are even out there, to even see what the options are before completely dismissing it. Because if there is an ounce within you that might want to possibly travel abroad and see what that's like, I think you you at least deserve to ask, like, what's out there.
So for a question like, should you have a faculty advisor? Should you do an internship? Should you do research experience? It's almost always yes. But for the question, should you do study abroad? Maybe what we really want to ask is, do you want to do study abroad?
Right. Yeah. And there's a difference. You know, there are some students that I talk to about study abroad, and they absolutely, it's not on their radar. But a lot of students are interested. And so if you think at any point that you might look back one day and go, this might be a good idea, or I wish I would have done that, because that's what happened with me.
Okay.
I didn't do study abroad. I was scared to death because me just going to college was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was out of my comfort zone. And so when I thought, oh my gosh, could I actually go to New Zealand? It was like me thinking about going to Mars. It was just completely out of my wheelhouse. And so I was too scared to even ask, is that even a possibility for me?
So a comfort wheel is something in your wheelhouse with which you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And this
comfort
was neither.
Wheel. Yeah.
This wasn't comfortable, and it wasn't something that you knew how to do.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have had any idea how to study abroad when I was in college, and I didn't study abroad. But I did have a 3-week trip to another country where I was playing the drums for a performance group that was going around
England. Look at you.
Performing. Yes, I was a rock star, turns out. Playing in elementary schools and other exciting venues.
But we sold out.
Yeah, we got 5 days off in London, though, and it was so fun.
Oh, I love London.
Of course, I didn't have any money, and so it was hard to have the money to do the things I wanted to do in England, because I wasn't a first-generation college student, but I didn't have any excess cash ever.
Okay.
And so for me, I also didn't study abroad. And I can see there would be times when maybe someone doesn't want to. Like if you're pre-med and you have a very lockstep major and you have to take exact courses or you can't graduate on time. But I think that what we're coming to is it's perfectly fine not to. But if you want to, this might really be a good opportunity. And it leaves me feeling like I want to talk to someone who actually knows what they're talking about. So, Aurora, why don't we just bring in a real expert?
Yeah, I would love to do that, because I am not an expert. I need to talk to somebody that has some answers. Give me some answers.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Kristin Stasiowski. She's the Assistant Dean of International Programs and Education Abroad for the College of Arts and Sciences. She's also an Assistant Professor of Italian Language and Literature in the Department of Modern and Classical Languages at Kent State. She got her PhD at Yale. Not bad.
Not bad.
And here she is to talk to us today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, let's just start with, now, why would a psychology student in particular want to go study abroad?
Fantastic question. I think very apropos for today. You know, when I see any student who wants to go abroad, I think to myself about the way in which they can, within their discipline, really find something that's a key for them. And I think for psychology students who are interested already in creating connections and forging new relationships in a communicative way through language, through gesture, through the perception of what they've got to be able to read in another person's story, especially if they're interested in doing some clinical work, I think that traveling abroad really increases a student's perception of the way that certain individuals tell their narrative through their cultural lens. And that way of talking about culture can help us to understand that each one of us, in truth, represents a culture unto ourselves. I'll give you a little example. I was with a friend of mine in the airport recently, and I got to meet her 2-year-old child. As we were about to say goodbye, the child was waving to me, but was waving to me in the way that looked to an American like he was saying, "Come visit me, come visit me." And his mother said, "Oh, no, no, you don't wave that way." And I said, "No, no, no. Actually, if you've been to Italy, you know that Italians, when they're waving, wave in the same way. They can say ciao, ciao and wave like they're saying, come and visit me." And so I said, really, he's just being culturally very advanced in his way of waving to people. And so I think, you know, in that circumstance, if you think about the way that, you know, a mother's trying to teach her child something about connecting with and communicating with another individual, there are multiple ways of seeing communication. And what could have been perceived as a wrong way of doing it, instead is just a different way of doing it. And so I think that for psychology students, being able to have the flexibility to see those differences and embrace those differences, especially in a field that is so central to the way that we understand humans, is absolutely critical.
So that's a really good point. And full disclosure, I've been to Florence.
Then you know.
And when I interviewed one of our faculty who was there teaching a class on emotions, that was one of the things she mentioned, is that there's no way to fully appreciate the influence of culture. You know, some things are universal and some things are culture bound. And when you're there in the country, then you can start to just observe people, you know, in the cafe, in the museum, and you can start to see how different people show different emotions and how some of that is common to all and some of it is very unique to the culture.
Absolutely. And, you know, for students who say to me, "Well, yeah, but I really want to go into a field where I'm working in a hospital in Ohio. So why should I study what Florentines do in Florence or, I don't know, what people in Chile are doing?" I say, "Well, you know, let's think about whether or not you're being brought on to be a counselor in a time where someone's dealing with a grave illness or in some cases even with death. Does every culture respond differently to issues of explaining illness or death? Could there be issues where a particular gender in a particular culture might have to hide or not be as fully disclosing when it comes to certain illnesses or certain issues?" And so having that awareness alone, that each individual that we're dealing with represents a world of their own meaning making and their own narratives and their own empathy that you've got to find and make a bridge to, I think for psychology students is just critical. It's critical really for any student, but especially for psychology students who are held to that higher standard, being expected to find a way into someone else and being able to help that person even explain themselves to themselves.
Okay. Well, so I think everybody knows that I am an academic advisor in the Department of Psychological Sciences here at Kent State University. So one of the special things that I do is I specialize in being the study abroad advisor for the department.
And we love you for that.
And so so I help students, especially with the program, the Destination Florence program. And so I know that Florence and Italy has been mentioned a couple times, but I guess I just wanted to, you know, kind of pick your brain. I only know enough to be dangerous with the program because I know about curriculum and I know about classes and what can go where, but I just want to hear from you. What is the Destination Florence program here at Kent State University?
Absolutely. I'm gonna tell a story there too. I think that for those who are familiar with registrations for marathons, or even if you're not, you'll know that the New York City Marathon is something you can go online and register for and pay your money to participate in. However, there's also a magazine called Runner's World, and if you decide to go and pay for a VIP package through Runner's World magazine to participate in the New York City Marathon, you get to have a massage before you show up, and you get to have, you know, a person giving you pancakes along the trail. And so you get a kind of add-on experience where you're inside the container of a particular program that then participates in a larger event. And that's exactly what we have designed with the Destination Florence program for psychology students. We wanted to create a multi-semester track program for which students could be preparing to go to Florence prior to their experience. A lot of students worry that when they go abroad the first time, they're not going to have friends. So by being in a semester track program where they're getting introduced to a cohort of psychology students who are planning on all going over together, they get to do things like a special cooking class. They get special lectures before they go. They get a little bit of additional hand-holding when we formally apply as a group to the Florence program the semester before they depart for Florence. We do it together as a group with the experts from the Office of Global Education walking us through the application. And so there are a lot of privileges and benefits that come from being part of this designer pre-departure track program. The biggest success that we've seen is that students get guaranteed scholarship money. So if you're worried about applying, as any student can at any time for our Florence program, you can apply, and then you apply in addition for scholarship money. When we accept you to the Destination Florence program for psychology students, by being admitted to that VIP program, you get guaranteed money for you to then apply for additional scholarship money through other sources. It's really ideal, I think, for students interested in then going on and taking specific to their major courses while they're also in Italy, as the perks don't end with your departure. They continue with additional lectures and additional course materials and additional field trips while you're in Florence for that special aspect of why you're part of the program.
Speaking of students, I see that you brought Jordan, your intern.
Hello, I'm Jordan Worrell. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's fact check what Dr. Stasiowski is saying. What kind of experiences did you have?
So many experiences. I remember my first day going into Florence. I actually came in by myself because I took an independent flight away from the class. So it just basically means I took a 16-hour flight with four different flight connections all by myself in four different countries because I'm crazy. Yeah, I know. But anyways, my first days there, it was really insane. But when I got all moved into my apartment, it was very easy. Everything just like fell into place. And it really felt like a home from away from home. You know what I mean? It's very comfortable. What were you going to say?
So you were able to acclimate pretty quickly then. You had an apartment and you're living in a foreign country, and yet very quickly you felt at home.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's Wi-Fi, of course. Who doesn't need Wi-Fi? And there is a washer, there is a kitchen, a bathroom, everything you need there. And as soon as I got there, I was immediately met by someone from Kent State University. So that was very comforting to know that someone from, like, you know, the States was there and was like, it's okay, it's safe here, and we'll help you get acquainted with the culture.
The building is secure. I love the building. That's one of my favorite features because it's in a fantastic location, has key card access. And so you feel like people can't just walk in off the street. And the nice classrooms. I mean, did you like the building?
Absolutely. It's beautiful. It's I believe it's a 2-floor building. Very, very nicely made. Absolutely. And the professors were excellent, for sure.
I have a question about like the facility itself. The people that are working there, are they Kent State employees or?
Absolutely. Yes, we're very fortunate to have 9 full-time Kent State employees that. We have 3 student advisors there that are 24-hour a day available for any type of question or issue or problem that a student might have, whether it's academic or whether it's related to, like, I can't find a Band-Aid, and how do you say Band-Aid? And then we have, you know, of course, our local faculty who have all been, you know, vetted through their departments. They're experts in their fields, and so whether you're dealing with an issue of kind of social or academic nature, or whether you're dealing with anything in between, you know, I like my sheets on my bed, or they, you know, I don't have a pot or pan for something I need to cook in my kitchen. They're really there all the time. And as I tend to say to students, if you, God forbid, should fall and hurt yourself on the way to class at Kent State, you get yourself to the hospital and you have to hope that maybe you have friends that will help you. Right. And maybe your family will come, or maybe they won't. But, you know, if anything happens to you, God forbid, in Florence, you know, someone's always there all the time to make sure that you can be taken care of.
So I don't want to say hand-holding, but this is as close to traveling the world while having your hand held as as close as possible. Like, this to me sounds like,
let's call it concierge.
This is concierge service. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And you know, for the Italians, hand-holding is a whole different thing. Everybody's holding hands in Italy, whether they're, you know, mothers and daughters or fathers and sons. So they have a different romantic concept of hand-holding. And so we like to think that when you're holding hands, you're creating new bonds. bonds.
That's right.
But it's very concierge-based. I mean, the Florence program in particular is one for students who are a little bit nervous about leaving the country the first time.
Yep.
Or maybe they don't know the language. It's not necessary to know the language when you travel abroad.
But it's so important to know the language. We try to encourage all of the people that come into our office at 126 Bowman, the Education Abroad office. We're like, it's so important to at least learn some of the language before you go to Florence as a respect to their culture. And it also helps you to get around so much. I mean, just from going to restaurants to finding your way around, just like knowing how to ask, where is this, where is that, is really helpful.
I didn't have a lot of notice when I was going to go, and I started listening to a podcast on how to speak Italian. So I confess that I learned as much language as I could before I left.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right. You don't have to know the language, but just knowing some things can really help you get around and help you to show that you're making an effort.
Absolutely.
I think everybody appreciates that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like to share with students when I'm asking them to consider study abroad is that in the Italian language, the word for student is studente. And of course, it sounds similar, so it's an easy one for us. But they have a second word called allievo, which sounds a little bit like the word for yeast in Italian, lievito. And if you think about what yeast does to bread, it makes bread rise. The reason why in Italian they would have that second word for student, allievo, is because they believe that if a teacher's doing the right thing and a student's doing the right thing and there's a kind of charismatic relationship of mentoring happening in the classroom, that the real point of higher education is that we can raise up through education the people that we are surrounded by. And that's something that they really are experts in Italy.
You know, and toward that end, another one of the faculty members that I interviewed while I was in Florence talked about the development that people go through when they study abroad.
Yeah.
And so in a way, Florence or wherever you are when you study abroad is the teacher. And there is absolutely a sense of raising up that happens when people have to learn to negotiate the public transportation and to get around and to figure out how to make change in different currencies. And this individual said that the semester that they return, it's still sinking in, but the semester after that, there's just a kind of a change in how mature and capable students are after one semester of study abroad.
Absolutely. And I think you're all very good to point out that, you know, we've spoken a lot about Florence in particular, but Kent State has over 200 different programs and destinations around the world for students. And we don't limit majors to programs. So if you're a psychology major and you're thinking, well, Florence is the only place I can go, no, there are a lot of programs that I think anyone could find useful. There's an LGBTQ program going to the UK in May, for example. There's a trip to Poland. Perception and Remembrance that deals a little bit with issues relative to the Holocaust. There are many. There are programs in the sciences that go to South Africa and Costa Rica. There are programs also that take you to destinations in the United States, our study away programs that can allow you to get a deeper understanding about people who may be from a different region of our own country. And that's one of the things that I think is fairly unique for Americans when they get a chance to travel outside of their comfort zones, is that the people with whom they feel they have little in common, and either politically or racially or ethnically or maybe regionally, they start to think, well, now I'm in Frankfurt Airport and I don't know how to work the vending machine. And the only person that can help me is the English speaker that I otherwise would have never wanted to talk to. And all of a sudden, there's a new bond that you can make where you can cross the aisle in any number of ways and figure out that you do have more in common than not.
Yeah, even if you don't speak the language, people are always willing to help you. I feel like my biggest experience studying abroad was actually while I was in the airport, obviously, and then when I got to Kent. But what taught me traveling from like four different countries with four different flight connections was like there's always somebody that's willing to help you, like no matter whether they speak your language or not. Like, I mean, there's always common nonverbals. There's common like gestures that you can always use with people, and like people always try their best to get you to where you need to be. And even when I got into Florence, I remember I was on the bus one time, and it was one of the first few days when I was out by myself and there was like no faculty, no students yet. I was out on the bus and I had this ticket, and it was a paper ticket. You have to like stamp it inside the bus, and it was wrinkled and I couldn't get it to go in. And so this old woman came up to me and she took my ticket and she stamped it for me, and she had no idea what I was saying or trying to do, but she kind of knew just from how I was struggling. And so that really My study abroad experience really proved to me that no matter where you go, there's always someone that's willing to help you.
That's awesome.
Sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. I will say, as somebody that, I don't want to be a Johnny Raincloud, but doesn't this cost a lot?
Oh, I don't want to be a Johnny Raincloud either. You know, when we talk about the costs of education, clearly these days it's stratospheric. And yet, when you think about the career potential that students have after they graduate with some of the additional costs of study abroad, we've got two different ways of thinking about cost, really. We've got the effective cost of the program, and I'm going to invite Jordan to speak about that a little bit since she's been through it very recently. And then we've got the second idea about the way in which you get compensated for those extra costs once you leave Kent State University and you're on to your next career opportunity. And there are two examples that I like to give of students who have recently graduated that have gotten not only their dream jobs, but higher positions within their dream jobs because of their study abroad experience. One of them is Miranda. And Miranda went on a tour of the NetJets facility. It's a private aircraft company. And she ended up getting the job on the spot because the CEO was present when the tour guide asked a question about the ability for their clients to go to places like the Amalfi Coast or to Positano or to Santorini. Because in case you're wondering, once you have the money to rent a private aircraft, you don't really want to go to Nebraska with it. You want to go to Amalfi. And so, you know, from that standpoint, Miranda had not only been to those places, but when the tour guide said something like, have you been to those places? She said, certo, which in Italian means absolutely, certainly. And so she was hired on the spot. And then colleagues at the company who'd been waiting a decade to go to Aspen on New Year's to deal with the accounts in Aspen on New Year's were pushed aside, and she was invited to do that. And I think you can only imagine the type of A-list Hollywood actors that she was dealing with their private jets arriving in Aspen on New Year's 4 months into her new job. And
wow.
So she had the opportunity to do something pretty exceptional. And Kevin had the same issue. He wanted to work for the FBI, but he decided to study everywhere except where you would think someone from the FBI needed to be trained. You know, as in the world of that we live in today, you'd think, well, send him to Russia or send him to an Arab nation in the Middle East or whatnot. He went to Italy. He went to Korea. He went to Poland. He went to India. And the FBI came after him and said, we want to recruit you. They gave him the highest security clearance of anybody at his age and stage and said to him during his interview that they found his way of experiencing the world and his nonlinear thinking to be the biggest skill set that they need today, because the problems of today and the issues of today require people to not have blinders on and to not be thinking in lockstep ways, but to rather pursue these non-traditional solutions from having developed a non-traditional perspective on the world. So both of those individuals are making more salary dollars as a result of their study abroad experience. So in terms of compounding interest, it's great to think that that little bit more you could spend as an undergraduate to get abroad is actually going to be paid back over time once you get the higher job and the higher salary when you graduate. But in terms of actual costs, Jordan would love to tell you about how she confronted some of those challenges.
I would say just starting off before you even go to Florence, I would recommend saving up around like $500 just for like buying souvenirs or going out for food or going to the clubs, which is what I did, all of those things. And it was a lot of fun. As for the general cost for myself, assuming that I didn't pay for any like extra weekend excursions, like going through the school, I paid around a total of like $4,000 to $5,000, which actually isn't that much. And that's actually what a typical semester here costs at Kent State, if not a little bit less, around by like less than $500 than a regular semester, if that answers well.
Wow. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
So it sounds like the cost is kind of the same, except that you have to budget for the extra expenses you'll have if you want to travel around, if you want to bring back some souvenirs. Anything like that's going to cost some money, but it sounds like the tuition is still just tuition.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's very similar. I mean, it's if anything, it's $500 less than a regular semester.
There's airfare.
Yeah, of course.
And you're buying your own food. You're not on a meal plan. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit of a wash. Maybe there's some extra expenses in the real world once you're actually there and you don't want to just sit in your apartment forever.
Right.
There's going to be more expenses. But maybe this is the time to, you know, break open your piggy bank or leverage the extended relatives or, you know, ask for money for the holidays and your birthday instead of presents.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to save up. Obviously, if you really want to help yourself out, I would recommend just saving up even $1,000 just for extra money in case for even emergencies as well, like medical or anything. But what I was also going to say was that that's also why the Education Abroad Office is there to help students personally to get scholarships. Like, we will actually help you handwrite scholarship essays to help you get that extra money, which makes it even easier to study abroad through
Penn State. That's
great. Yeah.
That's awesome. Because when I am working with students and I tell them that there are scholarship opportunities, mm-hmm. and then they feel this sinking feeling. And I know that I felt this as well when I go, oh, a scholarship, no one's ever going to pick me. But a real person with a real set of eyeballs is actually reading it. Mm-hmm. So if you put something on there a little more in depth than, I just want to eat spaghetti and I want a cute Italian boyfriend. If you actually talk about...
Seen those.
Exactly. Yeah. And I could probably guess that they weren't awarded the scholarship.
You're genie.
But if you can be a little more complex and talk about, mm-hmm. how this will enrich your life and, experiencing these other cultures and how it's going to broaden your horizons, I really think that you have a real shot, because not a lot of people actually apply for these scholarships. Yeah. It's scary, actually.
Yes, you raise an interesting issue. I was fortunate at one point in Florence to ask students to do journal entries, and I had to illustrate to them what made a good and bad journal entry after visiting the David, which is a sculpture by Michelangelo of a very naked man. And so a good journal entry
would say something imagine.
Like, my goodness, the positioning of the David is so important for Florence as a symbol because he's so brave and so strong and so incredible. Not so great journal entry would be like, oh my God, David reminds me of my ex-boyfriend. Like, let me tell you, he really made me crazy, and then we broke up. Wow. So there are when you're talking about scholarship essays, the same thing is true. Talking about how much wine you hope to consume in Italy or any other European country, right, where there's no age limit on alcohol consumption, not the smartest way to get the money.
But you're saying that you have help. So if somebody is wanting to write in for one of these scholarships, you can help guide them with, maybe give them some encouragement, like what not to say and what to say.
Yeah. And the thing we see the most often is that students really struggle to put it out there that they've got their dreams and their desires. It may seem obvious, I think, to anyone that this is an opportunity for you to really invest in yourself. And yet when you ask someone to talk about themselves and to put themselves out there and say, this is something I've really hoped for, it touches that same vein, Aurora, of, well, they're never going to give it to me anyway, and so why should I put myself out there? And so I think working with someone who can get you to converse a little bit more fluently about your own passions and desires and interests and dreams is helpful, because when you do put that down on a page, it's really hard for another human being to say, nah, I don't think so, doesn't qualify. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's, I heard at one point that 43% of our scholarships go unclaimed per year. I know for the College of Arts and Sciences, at one point we had enough scholarship money to give out something like 60 scholarships, and I received 20 applications.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's not enough applications.
Not at all. Not when the help is there. I mean, it is a university priority for Kent State to make sure that our students are globally competent citizens of the world in a very complex 21st century environment. And so the support is there if the desire is there. I usually say we can't make you want it, but we can make you get it.
Okay, I want it. Where can people go to find out more?
Well, they can certainly use their friend Google, and if they were to Google Kent State Education Abroad, they would find immediately a lot of sites that could help them.
Okay, I'll put it in the show notes. And the other thing I'll point out is that if you're not at Kent State, your friend Google will also find the study abroad office at your university or college.
Or you could very easily come to Kent State as a guest student and enjoy some of our premier programs. It was said that CBS Los Angeles featured Kent State as the premier destination in Florence out of all Italian and American programs in Italy. There are about 157 of them, and we're at the top of the list. So if you're finding yourself in Nebraska and you don't have that private aircraft to get to Florence, make sure you apply. You can Google and guest student your way right to Palazzo Vittori.
You hear that, Toronto? I know you're listening.
Okay, thanks so much, Jordan and Dr. Stasiowski, for coming on the program. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Absolutely. In Polish, it would be Stasiowski.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to learn that. I like what I believe is the Italian pronunciation.
Well,
I don't know.
It ends in a vowel, so.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.